My guest at this time is Chris Horner. He's an attorney and a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute here in Washington. When it comes to pending international agreements, the Obama administration's current efforts to strike a nuclear deal with Iran get most of the headlines. But another issue likely to come to a head this year is the push for a global climate change agreement. The negotiating text for that deal is now available, and Mr. Horner says there's plenty in there for the United States to be worried about. He also wrote about it recently in the Washington Times. And Chris, it's always good to have you with us. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. My pleasure.
The thing you focus on most in your piece for the Washington Times from Sunday says this. There's a proposal for an international climate justice tribunal in order to oversee, control, and sanction the fulfillment of and compliance with the obligations of the various parties under this agreement, as well as the 1992 climate change deal. So parse this out for us. What exactly would this thing do?
That's a very good question. What is climate justice? This is troubling for several reasons. First is we have the president has said that whatever comes out of Paris, that is this deal, is not going to be a treaty. And you mentioned Iran. That sounds very familiar to anybody who's in the Senate right now or paying attention to that circumvention of our Constitution, which says the Senate has an advisory and a confirmation role in international agreements. Well, whatever comes out of this Kyoto 2 talks, the president said it's not going to be a treaty, so I don't need to go through the Senate. But now we see this draft that has a court. That's a problem because you know about the Law of the Sea Treaty, and I think we've discussed it over the years. That was a global environmental treaty as well as it was a wealth transfer and so on, but it had a court as well, and that was a major reason the United States never ratified it. Ronald Reagan, the first thing he did was push that aside. Bill Clinton later signed it, but no, we've never ratified it because it has a court. It was Kyoto with a court. Now we actually have a Kyoto court, and the president's saying, tell you what, that ratification is proving to be a problem. We've seen that when our system causes him obstacles, he decides he doesn't have any use for our system. And so now we see it's going to be, in a non-treaty, a climate justice tribunal, which I assure you has really one country in mind, and it will not be stacked with Antonin Scalia's of the world. It will be stacked with people who style themselves as climate jurists seeking climate justice, which, as we've seen in recent years, means pretty much any grievance there is. Climate is an excuse to force a wealth transfer to remedy it.
Chris, you've obviously studied these climate negotiations over the years, and usually all of the sacrifices are supposed to be made by a handful of people. Oddly, in many cases, not so much the Chinese and the Indian governments, but the United States primarily and other Western industrialized nations. Is that kind of the same road we're headed down in this proposal from what you're seeing in the other text?
I have no doubt. In fact, the gentleman who headed this group, he recently retired. His name was Ivo de Boer. He had said, look, the United States has got its system and it's causing us problems, so we're going to make the next agreement politically binding. It was transparently all about us. When this agreement was drafted in the 90s, it was all about us. When Asia happened and all this development occurred, thank goodness, finally, and their emissions actually began skyrocketing while ours did not, it remained about us. Now, that's odd if it really was about greenhouse gas emissions and so on. Now that they're putting in a court and claiming they're going to go around the U.S. Senate, you need to be very concerned because, again, these climate jurists will not be those who have our best interests in mind.
Chris, you mentioned that the president's going to try and go around the Senate's role of ratifying proposed treaties. It would be a two-thirds vote if it got to the Senate. What avenues are there? Is it just a matter of going to the courts if the president actually signs this and then tries to ignore the Senate's role in this?
It may. What I think is the president also has this idea of politically binding in mind. He's trying to make sure that his EPA rules, which you've discussed before, are too politically hot button that his successor will not touch them and undo them, and Congress will not undo them, and the courts will be reluctant to undo them. So that's really one of his objectives. What do you do in this case? Well, right before Kyoto, the Senate passed a unanimous resolution saying, don't go do this. Unless it comes through us and meets the following conditions, it's meaningless. That effectively neutered Kyoto in advance. Much like the Senate letter that went out this week, 47 senators telling the Ayatollah, he's freelancing. Don't think anything he strikes with you is a treaty. It's got to go through us. They need to make the same statement, either in a letter or preferably through a sense of the Senate resolution, saying anything he does that purports to bind us in Paris on climate is freelancing. World courts do not think this is a treaty because we don't. And that is a necessary step, and it would undo it. It's a gesture against a gesture, but these things matter in this realm and often in the courts.
Chris, you mentioned back in the 90s that resolution, sense of the Senate resolution, was unanimous. Do you think, given the atmosphere in Washington and even on this issue, that we're likely to see that again, or would it largely fall along party lines nowadays?
Yeah, it wouldn't be unanimous, but as long as you got more than a third of the Senate, what you would be saying is you're not going to get two-thirds ratification. So they would shoot for a majority, and in fact, there was a little heralded resolution about this Kyoto 2 treaty in January, and it got 51 votes, but it didn't really go, it didn't make it plain that whatever happens is not a treaty unless it goes through the Senate. 51 votes is plenty. To be honest, 34 votes is plenty. But you have to put the world on notice because of something called customary international law, which our courts sometimes bow to, that whatever happens is not a treaty if it doesn't go through the Senate. And a 51 vote margin is great.
We're talking with Chris Horner of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And Chris, you and I have talked about this issue for many years now. But just to crystallize here, if folks haven't been following this too closely, why would the United States be eager to be part of an agreement that essentially forces us to make sacrifices that few others are and submit ourselves to some sort of nebulous climate justice court? What is the thinking of the administration right now?
Well, there are a lot of people, including the head of the UNFCCC, which is the UN body running this, and some academics and some authors who've come out lately saying, look, capitalism is the problem. This is how we solve the problem. This is how we solve capitalism. There are a lot of people who believe that, including some of the administration. Some want a deal for the sake of a deal. And many of them, as I indicated earlier, think that doing this would make their EPA rules, which are legally very vulnerable, untouchable as a political matter, and judges read newspapers too. So these are somewhat intangible objectives in that, well, the courts would say we shouldn't do this, Congress will say we shouldn't do this. None of it's binding, but all of it's meaningful. And the administration really ties the hands of its opponents if it does this, and so that's what I believe what they have in mind.
Well, we'll certainly be following it, and we thank you very much for bringing it to our attention, Chris.
Thank you, Greg.
Chris Horner is an attorney. He's also a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute here in Washington. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.